Off the Ball. GAA.
Probably booing.
Text me last night at 6 o'clock. Any sign of these power rankings? No, Pat. You won't be getting 8 hours to prep to rip me asunder. You'll get to see it the morning of.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Koigig Podcast. Hopefully we're all coming to you a little bit more relaxed than we were the last time we were on the podcast. It was a difficult one to record, but we've had a few days now to sit back, contemplate things and move on back to club football, which is back with a bang this weekend. Joining me to look back on those fixtures, I have Ireland international Jamie Finn, Shamrock Rovers Scarlett Heron, and of course our very own P Mount United, sporting her kit this evening, actually, just to remind us all where she comes from, Karen Duggan. Guys, welcome back to the podcast. Nice to have you all. Have you recovered from that nice soccer writers awards on Friday, where we saw Julianne Russell win Women's Personality of the Year, Karen?
Yeah, it took me till about 20 minutes ago to recover, but it was it was nice to be celebrating Julianne's win. Obviously, I think it was thoroughly deserved based on the year she's had, both with club and internationally, and just kind of everything she's brought back into that squad. I think it was a real feel-good story. So it was a really nice afternoon to get to celebrate her and all of her achievements. So yeah, very, very proud friend sitting there watching her.
I know, and you are a former recipient yourself as well. So I'm sure you're able to give all
the I didn't go the year I won, though. So.
Yeah. Well, I hope she got all the top posing tips off your mum, because your mum did go and she was on the front of the programme for the evening as well, which I think is very impressive. Yeah.
Bernie had a great time last year. Said the wine was lovely.
Oh, there you go. That's all that matters. No, you're right. It was really nice to see Julianne get the award, especially considering the week that was in it. And when you looked at everyone that was in that category, the way the Soccer Writers Awards work is that they don't really do like player or manager. They do personality. So everyone's lumped in there together, which is a nice way of doing it, I think, as well, because it gives you a few different things to talk about. Like, for example, Damien Duff won it on the men's side, which I don't think anyone was surprised about in the slightest. But yeah, it was great to see her get to celebrate and get the limelight. We got to see a few of her top highlights from across the year as well, which was nice. Although I think she was half watching it with her face in her hands. I don't think she wanted to see the whole replays, but it was very sweet. Jamie, we were chatting a bit before we came on about Birmingham and a difficult enough weekend for them in the cup.
Yeah, it was a disappointing result for us. Obviously, the FA Cup is a really nice cup to stay in and, like, yeah, compete in. So it was a difficult enough result. Durham are a tough side. Whether it's home or away, they always kind of seem to put it up against us. But listen, we just focus on the league and, yeah, hopefully we can continue to progress in that. But, yeah, it was a difficult result the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we had Irish interest in both teams, obviously, with both Birmingham and Durham, Scarlett, and that's just what we've kind of become used to at this stage with these games that are especially tight in the Championship.
Yeah, even when you're looking for, like, when you're looking for, like, teams to sort of support and back, you're kind of looking through the squads and you can't really decide because there's so many Irish players at each one. Like, so, yeah, as Jimmy said, like, both teams sort of top of the table, so it's good to see so many sort of Irish representation on both sides.
And how have you been getting on with your off season? I know you've had lots of little bits of training going on, college exams, all the fun things.
Yeah, I'm just bored at this stage. Like, everyone says it. That's it. I don't know if Karen's the same, but I'm just ready now. It's been a
no,
long
Karen,
enough time.
She partying.
Yeah.
I'm not ready. No, I need another few weeks. I feel like I'm only getting into social season now. And that takes a while to recover from. So, I know my season was a bit extended with Camogie and stuff, so I'm not rearing yet. Yeah.
When does your preseason start, Scarlett?
I actually think we're in on Wednesday, I think, but I think it's more of a, like, everyone get together and, like, sort of, I don't know, get to know each other again after a few months off. So,
well, the thing with our league is, because obviously it's not professional, it's not contracts, there's always so much movement that every year there is changes in the dressing room, so it's important for the management to get to know new players and for you to get to know your teammates and stuff. It can be weird.
You had a big announcement in the club during the week, Karen, as well. Some
It is,
manager
yeah.
coming in. How are you feeling about it?
Really good. Really, really good. I mean, I think based on last season, you can kind of tell that we're at a point where we're at a bit of a rebuild and we need to freshen things up. And it's good to have fresh set of eyes coming in with Gary Seary, and obviously Emma knows the club really well, so that transition there will be made easier for him with us. And you know, Gary's worked, you know, Jamie will know, like he's worked with senior international women, senior international men on the analyst side. So we've a lot to learn from him, and hopefully he can work with us. He's got his work cut out, but I think he's motivated, and I think that that kind of filters down through the team and stuff like that. And like you say, there's such a turnover in players and stuff. It's a complete fresh start for Beeman. So yeah, I think it's an exciting time for us. And we'll see how it goes. It could take time, but like I think that that's okay as well. If you go in with that attitude, it's not like we have to, you know, reach the heights that we did years ago when we had girls who were playing international and going pro like on a regular basis. So yeah, good times ahead, hopefully.
Yeah, well, like, I don't think anyone expects a manager to go in and turn things around straight away. There's always going to be some sort of building process, especially, as you say, in a league where it's not like you're getting a professional Premier League manager in or something. You know, it's people who've worked on the ground here for a long time. So, yeah, interesting to see how it goes for you all. Since there is other football on, we shall turn our attention towards the WSL. And Scarlett, you have pulled together our first team of the week of the Christmas season.
Yeah, so go ahead here. Courtney Brosnan in goal. I have a back three of Casper, Amanda Nilden, and Millie Turner in the middle. Then midfield duo of Dominic Janssen and Nuskin. And then I have a Beth England playing in the 10, which is kind of just to fit players in. And then the two wingers, West Ham duo of Vivian Assai and Serena Pubel, and then Alessia Russo and Bunny Shaw up front.
Karen, do you want to give us your thoughts and feelings on this team?
Yeah, I mean, it was always going to be attacker heavy. There was again a lot of goals this weekend, which was good. It's obviously great to see Courtney in because she, you know, it was obviously going to be a really tough week for her. But for them not to get the win after the performance that she put in was a bit sickening as well. So hopefully this cheers her up, this brings accolades that she never ever receives. And yeah, I mean, Bunny Shaw basically had Leicester buried in the first 15 minutes, so she was kind of like the standout kind of for me of that team. And Janssen, like at the start of the year, United, we were kind of talking about them not making brilliant signings and stuff like that, but Janssen's been pretty solid, I would say, for United, and she obviously got her first goal there at the weekend. And like the only other person that you could fit in is Grace Clinton. I think she's the thing that is making Man United tick at the moment. But I understand why you'd go for Janssen after getting that goal. And Nuskin, for me, she's like the most underrated player in that Chelsea kind of superstardom. But she always pops up. Always pops up with something, you know, and she's big and strong and versatile. So yeah, really good job alone.
Jamie, what about you? What are your thoughts on the team?
Yeah, I literally have written down here Clinton question mark as well. Would throw her in there as well. I think she's been, yeah, just serious for United this season, and I do think she's out of contract at the end of the season, is she?
Yep.
Potentially, like I
And based
think
on how
kind
Man
of,
United do their business,
yeah.
that's worrying.
They need to kind of, yeah, really, really lock her in because
Yeah.
she's been such a key player for them. In that midfield. Yeah, no, would very strong team. Obviously, nice to see Courtney back in. She made a couple of great saves for Everton. And the two West Ham girls as well deserve their place in that 11, I think. To come back from two goals down for West Ham, that's yeah, I think they deserve their place in both left and right wing. Russo as well, thought done really well. Had a nice finish too, so and Shaw obviously speaks for herself, I think, with her two headers, they were yeah, great.
don't think we have anything left to say about Katie Shaw unless she goes and scores like 9 goals in one game all by herself, which I wouldn't be totally surprised about. Oh, she
If you give her the supply, she could do it. I
yeah.
mean, those two balls into the box, they were decent balls, but it's the way she attacks them. Like, it's she has no fear, like, and that's just, you can't teach that in someone. You either have it or you don't, and she absolutely has it in abundance.
I think she's 3 goals top of the scoring charts already, which is kind of mad. And it's also mad that Sonia Baumgartner has already outdone one of Emma Hayes's records in terms of most consecutive games in a season in all competitions. So that was her 13th without a loss, and Hayes only ever did 12 in
Only.
only, of course.
Useless.
Scarlett, what about you when you were picking this team? What were the bits in particular that stood out for you for certain players?
Yeah, well, I think it was kind of, as the girl said there, attack and heavy. Like, there was 3 4-0 wins for three different teams, so like it's always going to be a bit spread out in terms of attackers. I was really impressed by Poubelle for West Ham. I just thought she was electric up and down that wing. Like, I hadn't really seen her before, or hadn't really like stood out in the game, but I thought she was really, really good. And especially like West Ham started so poorly, they did really, really well like across the board to bounce back from that, because I think maybe in past seasons they would kind of just give up with that, not give up at that stage, but you know, it'd be very difficult to overturn a 2-0 deficit. Like, so I thought overall West Ham did really well, but the two girls I see as well were really, really positive in their play, and basically the two of them kind of carried West Ham to that win. Katrina Gorry as well, I thought, played really well at the weekend, and maybe a bit unlucky not to be in this, but the midfield was kind of plummeted with talent, as the girls were saying, put Grace Kitten in there. But yeah, as well as that, I think New Skin as well is just like that central cog to Chelsea that no one really speaks about. Like, to stand out on that in that Chelsea team is something special. Like, so I was really, really impressed by her. And then as well, like we're saying, Courtney Brosnan, like she's been so, so good for Ireland. Like, and she's had consistent performances in that Everton team this year, and like taking them out of jail so many times. And as Karen said, like, it's just so disheartening from her, especially coming out after Tuesday to not get a win at Tottenham there. So yeah, I'd say she'll be very disappointed with that after her performance. Like, she completely kept them in the game. So yeah, difficult team to pick, like not many defenders, but yeah.
Oh, we don't mind about not having too
Nah.
many defenders in our team of the week. I
Goals
mean, it's
galore.
pretty
We have enough
fun.
defenders on the podcast. We don't need them on the team of the week.
I mean, it's a theme of the podcast at this stage that it's basically just how many players in attack positions can we fit into the team. The girls both mentioned Grace Clinton, and you said she was on her, or you're say like subs bench. What was the thing that didn't make you put her in?
I suppose it was just I had Millie Turner in centre half. Now, Man United did get overturned a few times, so you could kind of debate that. But at the same time, like, I thought they did sort of recover well, obviously, to get the clean sheet. Liverpool did put a good bit of pressure on them. And then as well, with Janssen in there, I didn't want to completely overload it with United players, to Karen's disgust over there in the corner. But
We get very few chances for you to do that. That's the only reason
yeah.
I'm interested.
But as well as that, like, I think Clinton has been brilliant, and she probably put her hand up so far for like a half season team of the year. So yeah, she's been great for Man United. Like, there's no reason why she's not on the list. Like, it's just, I don't know, just preference of the games I did watch in more detail to not. Like, I kind of mind the game, the Man United game was probably one of the games I kind of half glanced at rather than went in depth. So I apologize to Karen. I'll get her in
You're
next
all
week.
right.
I know, it's just to get Grace Clayton, keep her on her toes, you know, when she's listening to the podcast and
Yeah.
she's like, oh, I really need to aim for this next week so that Scarlett puts me in. Scarlett, thank you very much for doing that. It is appreciated as always.
No problem.
So now we'll move on to looking at the games of the weekend. And just to make sure Karen isn't too disgusted at no Grace Clinton in the United team, I'm actually going to start with that game because it was one of the most interesting of the weekend. Matt Beard admitting afterwards that they took a punt on formation and that it didn't really work out well for them, and that United those two teams, they would have been so close over recent seasons, and you would have expected Liverpool to be challenging United a bit, and that's just not happened at all. Jamie, where did it all go wrong for Liverpool at the weekend?
Yeah, difficult enough. Obviously, United turned up and they were clinical. They had 21 shots on target, or 20 shots on target. Jeez, they were doing well. shots on total. Six on target compared to Liverpool's eight and then two on target. They were just clinical, although they did kind of get caught in possession a little bit. But I think Liverpool were just caught even more in possession in central areas as well. Just didn't work out for them at all. And again, United clinical. Some good goals. I think the first goal was won back in possession. And then the second goal, Leah Galton, it's nice to see her back from a United point of view. I think she's a really good player. From experience from playing against her, she is so strong and physical and direct, and she always kind of likes that one off the shoulder in between the two defenders. And that's what the second goal kind of came from as well. So good to see her back from a United point of view. But yeah, they were just clinical. Yeah, four goals and a clean sheet. And like you said, you would have expected Liverpool to be, yet to not concede four as well. And yeah, a difficult day for Liverpool.
Yeah, I think they just left themselves too exposed. You know, like you said, they were caught in possession in the middle a little bit, and then they just looked really vulnerable and open. It wasn't like Man United had to work particularly hard for their goals. Like Galton's one long ball over the top, she had the pace because, you know, there was just such big gaps then. Liverpool were probably a little bit high in on that occasion. So, yeah, you take a punt on formation, you try new things. Liverpool are in a little bit, I guess, of a spot, you know. Last three, they won't be happy with. It's not what we've grown accustomed to over the last couple of seasons with them. And they were never easy to beat. And they particularly always seem to put it up to the teams in the higher half of the table, so I'd be very disappointed with that. And they're looking at the table now, and you see Spurs ahead of you. You're a bit like, when do Spurs win matches? You know, you can barely remember Spurs winning matches. Their matches have been so all over the place. But they find themselves in seventh now, and they were in among the conversation for fourth. Look, obviously it can change really quickly, but at the moment United have double the points of Liverpool, and I feel like that won't sit right with Matt Beard or with the players or the fans.
No, it's an incredibly difficult situation for them, I think, especially considering the expectation everyone had for them going into the season. And in terms of the expectation people had for United going into this, it has been a bit up and down, but also steady enough in that, you know, one loss in five, two draws, two wins. You know, it's chugging along, and it's chugging along despite all the stuff that's coming out. You know, former players talking about what it's been like at Manchester United the last while, the disregard to the team. You know, how do you kind of categorize it all?
I think United are lucky that the teams around them are inconsistent. I think that they have enough quality to kind of plunder their way through the matches that they should be winning. They're getting a little bit better in attack in terms of shots, getting shots off and stuff like that. Like Jamie said, though, they still look very vulnerable. I still don't know what is the United style of play. Still don't know any of that. And I'd say it is hard for them because they're looking around and there's all this hullabaloo going on around the men's team and trying to rebuild them and get them back to where they were. And like the women's team then is just always going to be a bit of a sideshow to that and not get the attention it deserves. From the top down. So I'd say it's a strange club to be part of because it's such a huge club, but I feel like they feel like a small team, which it shouldn't be the case. They've got some very, very good players, you know. They just need to be better in terms of things like, obviously they loaned Grace Clinton out last year and she made such an impact at Spurs that they brought her back. But you see that quality, you get that nailed down, surely, straight away, start of the season. Things like that, like, are we going to continue to be a feeder club? Shouldn't be the case given the status of the club as a whole. But yeah, I think Man United could, if they keep going the way they're going, could easily find themselves where Liverpool are finding themselves this season. I think there's always that chance that they'll become inconsistent based on how they play and how they operate.
Well, there's also Like, there's so much of what you said there that I'd say is directly applicable to Liverpool, but it's also directly applicable to the larger club structures. You know, Matt Beard also complaining about budget-wise that there wasn't that much they could do with the squad, and therefore they have one of the smallest squads in the league. And you're looking at the two clubs, and you know, they're two of the biggest clubs in the world with two of the biggest budgets in the world. So the fact that that's not being trickled down, I think maybe people would expect it a bit more from United than Liverpool Scarlet. Like, it always feels like Liverpool have that family appeal as a club and are always trying to say that, you know, they have that one club mentality, but we don't really see that in action from them in the way you would with like an Arsenal or even a Chelsea.
Yeah, and I think like what like Jim Radcliffe came out and said at the weekend's really, really worrying, saying that like they're trying to fix the men's problems first. It's just so like clear that the women's team is not anywhere near the top of their list in terms of trying to develop it. And obviously we've seen at the start of the year that there was plans to develop the training ground for the men's, and they'd take over the ladies' training field, and sort of where do the women go then? So yeah, it's really disappointing from, as you say, from a club of that stature that they're not taking it more seriously. Obviously they still sit in a good position, but I just talk about there, like lacking a bit of consistency. I think they're probably lucky to be where they are in terms of how high up the table they are and maybe how many points they do have. But I think that might be just testament to maybe the gap between the teams in the WSL rather than Manchester United being like an outstanding women's team at the minute. But like they have the quality players, and like as Karen said, you just need to nail them down. Like the likes of Grace Clinton, like, and even Terland coming in, like she's had a good enough season so far. So it's just nailing down those players and trying to build on something, like trying to create a bit of consistency with the players you bring in, and like try keep them there for a prolonged period instead of maybe Grace Clinton obviously going on loan last year and then she might leave the club this year because of contract or whatever. So like yeah, just trying to keep consistency within the squad and try build a bit of a community within the team. Like you look at England struggled, the men's team struggled for years to create a bit of a like a more positive environment and a bit of a culture around it. I think that's probably something that United need to look at from the women's standpoint.
I think it's difficult as a player as well to kind of stay away from the comments that were made the week, as in like the media, the stuff that comes with it. Like, I think that's really hard for a player because as a player, when you play for a club, you want to feel valued. You want to feel that when you go out and step on the pitch. And I think that's like Scarlett was saying, I think those comments are really worrying to come from a club like as big as United. Like, it's, yeah, it's not great. And like I said, it's difficult for the girls to kind of just not listen to it because obviously you'll see it everywhere. But I think for them to go out and score four and get 3 points, that's all you need to do as players. But again, I think that is difficult to kind of turn the blind eye to because, like you said there with Grace Clinton, like if the club is serious about the women's team, you get players like that nailed down as soon as you can because you can see the impact that she has on the team. And again, recruiting new players to get United to the next level, to get them above the top four, to get them, you know, where they want to be as a club as big as United. So yeah, it's kind of worrying that for that aspect of things, especially with the growth of women's football. Yeah.
It's also whenever they talk about these things, I'm just like, but you're not talking about the millions of billions of euros that you need to run the men's side of things. You know, 1 week of one of the top United stars' wages would probably fix like half your problems within your squad, even with the way things are going for women's football. And obviously, they're not going to do that or take someone's wage. But, you know, to them, it's a very different sort of money than what we would be used to talking about, like in our day-to-day lives. So why can't it be found somewhere within a club, no matter how dire the situation is? But yeah, it'll be interesting to see over the course of the season. It doesn't feel like there's anyone in there at the moment who's kind of pushing the women's side of things. I know they have some more people that are due to come in at the start of the new year, but even from a PR perspective, you would think they would need to get someone out front and center fairly soon. To look at the other side of the table for a moment in what was potentially the most exciting game, at least for about 30, 40 minutes, when Crystal Palace were still relatively in it. 5-2 against West Ham. Crystal Palace went 2-0 up within 11 minutes, and then by 36 minutes, West Ham had pulled it back to 2-2, and then went on to score three more goals. So two of them coming fairly late on as well. But I think some of the comments around this game were quite interesting, and the fact that Rhian Skinner was playing a lot of credit to Laura Kaminski and what she's developing at Crystal Palace, and the fact that, they're bottom of the table, yes, but they have 5 points, and Bristol only had six for the entirety of last season. So they're very much in there with the rest of them, and there's a potential that they're not going to get relegated.
Yeah, I think with Palace, like as you said, there's what, four down there that are fairly close in that relegation battle. Like we've spoke about that before. It just takes a win to lift confidence. But yeah, I think obviously being 2-0 up, it's not ideal to then lose the game. But I think 3-2 at half time, then Palace coming out in the second half, I think their defence just kind of opened up. And yeah, maybe that lack of experience really to yeah, to kind of see out the game as well when you're 2-0 up. But I think credit to West Ham. Like we mentioned in the team of the week, the two girls, they played really well, and Gori as well got them back into it. But I think just noting as well, I think Hayley Nolan started that game. So I think that's a really positive. She's been out injured with her shoulder, so really nice to see her back in the team. I think she's such a good defender and really good on the ball as well, kind of picks out players nicely. So that was a positive as well from that game from Palace.
We love to see someone getting back on the pitch. Scarlett, in terms of these two sides, like obviously West Ham will be delighted that they came back and that they did get the 5-2, but letting Crystal Palace come at them, going 2-0 down in the opening minutes at home, it's not great from them as a starting point.
Yeah, like you never want to be 2-0 down that early on. Like, and it probably did shock them a bit. Crystal Palace obviously just took advantage of their slow start and did really well to convert the two chances. So yeah, I'd say that's probably a bit of a worrying aspect from West Ham. But I think Rhian Skinner will more so look at the positives of how they came back and scored five without answer. Like, that's really, really impressive for West Ham. And I think for Crystal Palace standpoint, you'd be more concerned about that than West Ham would be about going 2-0 down. I think Crystal Palace were killed on the transition, just a few little errors, and West Ham punished them and got in behind them. But yeah, it was a really interesting game. Like, it was really exciting. A lot of goals, a lot of great goals, and yeah, a good rivalry between the sides as well. So obviously West Ham just like took their chances at the end, but it's worrying for both sides probably to concede the two goals for us, like for West Ham to concede twice that early, and then for Crystal Palace to go on and give away that lead. Like, those are the sort of games that you have to dig deep. Obviously they scored early, but you need to sort of try, right, the next 5 minutes are really crucial after you score first. They kind of got through that. Then you need to try get to half time with a lead. You can't be letting 2-0 lead slip, especially when you're in the situation that Palace are in. But I think, like as Rhian Skinner said after the game, that like she doesn't think Palace will go down, and I've said before I don't think they'll go down either. But I think they'll take learnings from all these things, and definitely from Sunday, I think they'll take a lot of learnings from that.
Definitely. Cairn, it was a bit of a revival for Bethany England at the weekend. We've kind of been waiting for it to happen, hoping that it would happen for her own sake and getting back after a bad injury. But you'd have to say that Courtney Brosnan was star of the match once again, as we mentioned in Team of the Week, in terms of stopping. I mean, 26 shots from Tottenham, 8 on target, 12 blocked. It was some performance.
Yeah, and again, it's just Everton seem they need to score first. That's the thing with them. Like, I feel like they can do these defensive performances, and you have someone like Courtney, it keeps you thereabouts. Obviously, they got themselves back into a draw. I didn't see what the penalty was for. I couldn't
Same.
tell, but yeah, that's Everton's big sticking point now, not getting to half time at nil all or not taking the lead. They don't seem to be able to turn that around. Don't think they have enough in attack to do that. And yeah, great for Bethany England. Spurs were worth the win. I do think like it was back to the wall stuff for Everton for a long time. And the Spurs were kind of camped in around the Everton box for large periods. And maybe if they had a little bit more quality, they would have won by more, but they won't really care about that. They're just happy to kind of like quietly work their way up the table. Like I said, the fact that they're of Liverpool now, they'll see that as a huge plus and something that they can kind of springboard from. But yeah, not a game full of massive amounts of quality. But like I say, it's about getting the win. And for Everton, you know, it's really tough. It's really tough for them. They need to be doing what West Ham are doing in that they beat the two teams down at the bottom, because those 6 points will really take them really, really far if they can get them. And look, West Ham are up to eighth now. And if Everton don't beat those couple of teams behind them, they, like everyone's saying, you know, Crystal Palace are a good team, and I think it'll be between Everton and Crystal Palace still, though.
What do you think about that, Jamie?
Yeah, I would agree. Obviously another defeat for Everton, which is it's really tough to take down there. But I think if Everton didn't have Courtney, I think yeah, be in a worse situation, to be honest with you. I think yeah, she's a star player for them, but obviously you want your keeper to be a star player. You know, it's
Yeah.
different. But yeah, I thought she had a really good game, and obviously for Courtney, that's so difficult to come in from that international camp and go in nets and perform like she did. Obviously, she's just a professional in that aspect of things. But really difficult for Everton. I'm not really sure what they do from here. Well, I've said it before. I think they need to kind of change how they play as well. And like Karen was saying, like you need to stop conceding early-ish. Well, I think that was in the 25th minute, but early goals, they really leak.
Yeah, I think over the weekend we saw too many goals again from keepers trying to play out. And look, it's all well and good and you want to encourage it, but that's straight ball out to your centre mid if you're not in coming in at any type of angle. It's the worst thing you can get. Like you're going straight back where you came from. And even in the Chelsea game, you don't expect like Hampton and stuff to be making mistakes like that, but they've been a bit of a feature as well. Thankfully, it's not really Courtney doing that, but like you say, yeah, Everton, they're trying to play a game that they're not quite equipped to do with the players that they have. And maybe if they were a team that was completely injury free and they're developing that ethos there, that's fine. But you have to play with what you have. And at the moment, like Jamie said, they're just not doing that.
Scarlett, we already talked a bit about Bunny Shaw, and again, I don't know how much more we can say about her that I haven't already been said either on this podcast or on other ones. But two other goals that came in that City win over Leicester were from Jess Park and Mary Fowler, the kind of younger contingent at City. How important is it that they're getting these opportunities for City's progression?
Yeah, like you mentioned Jess Park there. Like, I think that Jess Park is one of those players. Like we talk about Nuskin being underrated. Like I think Jess Park is like phenomenal for her age. Like especially like I think she's absolutely unbelievable in that midfield for Man City. Like she completely controls it, and I think she can like see things that a lot of players can't see. She has that vision, and obviously an eye for goal as well, which for a midfield player is really, really important. It kind of gives you that added little edge. Like she does the hard yards, she sees the passes, but she can also contribute with maybe five, six, seven goals a year, which like for a team like City, if you have Bunny Shaw scoring, like could we even put a limit on that actually? If
However
she's
many
scoring
goals she will get.
however many goals she scores, and then you have your wingers like Mary Fowler and Aaron Hemp when she's fit, like contributing as well. Then you have a few midfielders to add to that, like the goals just mount up. And then like I think for Man City, it's always going to be it's going to be a tough game for Leicester. Like so, yeah, it was a good performance by City. I don't think anyone expected any different outcome. But yeah, it's great to see. I think City are probably one of the most consistent teams in terms of personnel. But obviously, given different players chances, particularly attacking players. And to be honest, when we speak about like goals for City and Bunny Shaw, I thought that when Lauren Hemp was announced that she was injured for the next while, I thought, oh, maybe that'll limit Shaw's supply, but it just hasn't happened. So I thought it would maybe slow her down a bit, but she's only excelling from there, like, and she's just an absolute tank, and there's just no stopping her, especially in those aerial duels. Like she's just a menace.
Yeah, I would love to disagree, and or at least be talking about an Arsenal player in that capacity. But unfortunately, City managed to snap her up. Jamie, speaking of Arsenal, Alessia Russo has found her bit of form, scoring in the last four games, continuing the unbeaten streak as well for the interim manager Renee Slegers, which is good considering how they started the season. Still a bit of change to come in that we're expecting a new manager to be announced relatively soon, but it feels like they found a bit of themselves again.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good win for them, and to score four and to concede none is, yeah, it's obviously a good day. But I think with Arsenal, I think the change was just so needed. It was crying out for the change, and you can see that it definitely was needed. I remember when we were speaking previous, like their shots on goal was really, really low, and you don't expect that from an Arsenal team, especially with the talent that they have in the squad and on the bench. So yeah, it just clearly needed some sort of change, and that was in the form of the interim manager. So yeah, it was a really good win, and Russo obviously has found some form too, which is good. And Meade getting on the score sheet and Blackstenius as well. So nice to kind of spread it out too among your forwards.
Yeah, you talk about the shots there. I mean, they had 17 shots, 9 of those are on target. But like possession wise, it wasn't even like Arsenal had a massive dominant performance. You know, it was 51% to 49%. So both teams were kind of relatively in there. Their accuracy was just a lot better, Karen.
Yeah, Villa aren't bad. Like, I enjoy watching Villa play. They have some really, really good players. Like, you still have Jordan Knobbs in there ruling the roost. Like, she's still top quality. And again, Villa are just another team that are, you know, they have it. It's just that final element, that goal scoring at the end that they're missing. And obviously, they're conceding way too many goals. So they find themselves in that position. It's not a position they should be in with the talent that they have. And yeah, Arsenal they're flying it again. You know, they have such a good squad. They really, really do. Be interesting to see what happens with the managerial role, if they'll do a FAI Eileen Gleeson, and it'll be fine. But yeah, no, they're good. Like, it's just hard for them when you're looking above you and the other two teams are just smashing it, and there's no sign of weakness there. Obviously, City dropped points to Chelsea, but they do not look like dropping points anywhere else. And Arsenal just left themselves a little bit, maybe too much work to do, which is mad considering they're not that far off, and the run of games that they've been on has been very, very good. But Chelsea are just, they're like robots at the moment.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Chelsea, I mean, a bit of a battle put up by Brighton at the weekend. And, you know, Sonny Bonpaster said going into this weekend that Sam Kerr's ACL means she's potentially going to be out until February, March. And any other team, that would be pretty devastating. But with Chelsea, you're like, where is she going to fit in? Would she come back?
Yeah, I don't like. I obviously it's terrible news for them because she's such a quality player. But I mean, they're fine. They're doing okay. Like I say, the couple of goals that they conceded were nearly of their own making. And I think if they hadn't felt so comfortable within the game, they probably wouldn't have made those mistakes. And they always feel like when they concede, they can just go up and score another one if they want. They're scoring so many different types of goals this year as well. Like, they're really coming from everywhere. Like, you're seeing Macario popping up with assists, and Lucy Bronze is getting herself in there, and like then you have Ramirez just running at you, which is the most terrifying thing ever. So they have it coming from everywhere. They have players that can do it all. So Brighton, you know, they had good chances, and they've a very good team, and I think that they'll stay in and around where they are in the table. But that's the depth and quality between the top three, and then what comes after. Chelsea just showed that they're able to manage games like that.
Scarlett, because this Chelsea team are so good, and we were talking about New Skin being underrated, it kind of feels like nearly everyone in the side is a little bit underrated, because it's impossible week to week to pick out one person who's the absolute standout. You know, you could probably say the same for Aggie Beaver-Jones, for Reading Cantnarid, you know, anyone who was on that score sheet at the weekend.
Yeah, and like you even look, just looking at their bench here from the weekend, like you have Ramirez coming on as a sub with 20 minutes to go. Like, I know if you're defending you're three, whatever it is, 3-2 down at that point. You know, you have a bit of hope maybe, and then you see Ramirez warming up and getting subbed on. It's just like, it's a joke. And then as well as that, like, you have Mike Amano didn't even play, and then even like Musovic, who had an amazing World Cup with Sweden, like on the bench. You have all these players, and Vicario as well coming on at halftime. It just like there's such strength and depth, and obviously Sonny Van Basten is doing such a brilliant job. But you kind of question like the it could you do a bad job with that Chelsea team? It's just so like you've so much talent in there and so much ability. And even bringing in the likes of Lucy Bronze in the summer, like just really, really good from like a business point of view as well, like maintaining all their players and getting in the young blood as well. Like Sonia talked about at the start of the season, how she'd put trust in young players like White Captain and Aggie Beaver-Jones as well, like coming to start that game there at the weekend. So I think they're just going to be the biggest sort of powerhouse in the WSL for the next few years, because the way they're going, they're unstoppable, and there's what, 5 points in it now at this stage, and you'd kind of think it's nearly game over because I cannot see where they're going to drop points.
Jamie, is it a bit boring having Chelsea being so dominant again?
No, they've just shown their quality so much, and I think for Van Basten, like, to keep every player happy, I think that's gonna be a struggle. Because you have such quality in your team and such depth, like Scarlett was saying there, to bring Ramirez on in what, the last 20 minutes, like that's crazy, you know. To have that quality on the bench, and I do think that will kind of cause some issues maybe to keep every player happy, because as a professional you want to play every game, and especially at Chelsea you want to represent the club, so that could be kind of difficult in itself. But yeah, no, they're 4 goals, and like Karen was saying, they conceded 2, but I wasn't really worried watching the game.
Yeah, that is fair. Guys, thank you very much for another excellent discussion. We will be back next week for the final weekend of WSL action until the 17th of January. So there's quite a lengthy off season there for the players. Karen's smiling away to herself, delighted at the idea of some time off. But as ever, if you want to get in touch with us at the Koi Gig Pod on X, we always love hearing from you. And the Koi Gig Pod and Off the Ball is sponsored by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you all very much for listening, and we will see you all next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.